Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the estimates of the Department of Industry, Energy, and Technology. And before we get started, just a few housekeeping housekeeping things to discuss. Number one is if you have your cell phones, if you wouldn't mind putting your cell phones on mute, please. I want to announce the substitutions this morning. Substituting for the member from Bonita Vista is MHA Barry Pettin from the MHA from Conception Bay South. And substituting for the member for Buren Grand Bank is Elvis Loveless, the MHA for Fortune Cape Lahoon. And substituting for the member for Placentia St. Mary's is Sarah Studley, the MHA for Mount Soil. And just a few things to discuss as well with regards to staff or committee members. Just wait for your tally light. If it's your position to speak, I mean, just wait for your tally light to come on. Just identify yourself by raising your hand. We're asked not to make any adjustments to the chairs. These chairs are fitted for the members of the House. And so if you could... You did? Well, that's your that's between you and your leader. And just a reminder that water coolers are at the back of the the assembly. I don't see any unaffiliated members this morning, but if they come in, I think we've sort of given them 10 minutes at the end of the session. Pardon? The entire session. We give them 10 minutes, yeah. So I would look for someone to move the adoption of the minutes of April the 3rd, moved by Jordan, seconder, by Elvis. All those in favor? Those against? Carried. Okay. And we'll probably look at taking a taking a washroom break maybe halfway through, 10:30 or so. Anyway, the first thing I'll do is ask the committee to introduce themselves, and we'll start off with MHA, Lucy Stoyles.
Lucy Stoyles, Mount Pearl, at MHA.
Sarah Studley, MHA from Mount Sio.
Elvis Loveless, Fortune Bay, Cape.
Christine Baldwin, GMO.
Annie McCarthy, Government Member's Office.
Jordan Brown, MHA, Lever West.
Stephen Kent, Sessional Assistant for the Third Party Caucus.
Cleveland Forsey, MHA Exploits.
Megan Winter, Researcher with the Official Opposition Caucus.
Barry Pettin, MHA for CBS.
And Minister, if I could have you introduce yourself or have them introduce themselves, yeah?
Andrew Parsons, MHA Berger-LePaul, Minister of Industry, Energy, and Technology.
Jason Higgins, Assistant Deputy Minister for Industry and Economic Development.
John Cowan, Deputy Minister.
Craig Martin, Associate Deputy Minister for Energy.
Alex Smith, Assistant Deputy Minister of Mining and Mineral Development.
Susan Wilkins, Executive Director of Renewable Energy.
Philip Ivamy, Departmental Controller.
Megan Nesbitt, Assistant Deputy Minister, Corporate Strategic Services.
Julian Ludmer, Assistant Deputy Minister for Business and Innovation.
Michael King, Executive Assistant to the Minister.
Tansy Munden, Director of Communications.
Nina Abundo, Executive Director, Oil and Gas.
Okay, and good morning to you all. My name is Brian Ward, the MHA for Bayver at Green Bay, and joining me at the table is my colleague Evan Beasley from the Speaker's Office. Anyway, I'll get the clerk to call the first set of subheads, please.
For the Department of Industry, Energy, and Technology, Executive and Support Services 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 inclusive carry? Minister, we're going to get a few remarks from you.
Andrew Parsons, won't belabor this, rather get into the questions and the line by line or any other questions. Have the full team here, so between all of us, we'll certainly do our best to answer any of the questions that come our way. And I'll, that's it, let her go.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. 1.1.01 to 1.2.03, MHA Pettin.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of, just first off, I guess, Minister, your attrition plan. How many positions have been removed in this past year on attrition, and what's the target for this year?
Megan Nesbitt. The targets for the attrition plan were met about 2 years ago. We don't currently have any attrition targets.
Okay. And how many people are employed in the department, and how many of those are contractual and temporary?
Megan Nesbitt, we have 238 active employees. 22 of those are contractual, and I'm sorry, what was the last part of the question?
Temporary. How many are temporary?
Temporary, 20.
Okay, thank you. Under 1.1.01, the Minister's Office, last year, travel and communications went over budget by $30,000, spending $76,000. What was the reason for this extra expenditure?
Andrew Parsons, this would have been the first actual year of travel, I guess, post-COVID. When you look at when I came in August 2020, I think there might have only been one trip the entirety of 2020. Most conferences were still not back on. Same with 2021. Remember, we had 4 or 5 months where we weren't back to normal between COVID slash election, even last year, late starting off, and many conferences hadn't restarted. Plus, I'm the first minister from this department that lived outside of the Avalon for the last little while, so there's the ministerial travels in there. You know, we're back to doing the Offshore Technology Conference in Houston, PDAC in Toronto. And one of the other bigger ones that will be coming in is, for the first time, there's a hydrogen conference in Rotterdam, which will be heavily attended by the province energy and now things. So it's all the old ones are still there, plus we're adding that new one, which comes with pretty significant cost in terms of getting booth display, accommodations, etc. So I think that would make it up. If I were to guess, looking at the budget, I think you'll see a more probably a not. I don't think 46 will cover it this year. I know it's an estimate. I would imagine it will be over again. That's just my guess based on a hopefully normal year.
Okay, thank you. The 1.2.01 corporate service, corporate strategic services. Again, the salaries went over by $50,000. What's the reason for this?
Andrew Parsons, I'll take a shot, but before I let Phil or Megan jump in, I think the variance there is due to the negotiated salary increases that came with staff.
That's correct, is it? Okay, thanks. Transportation communications, the budget is being increased to $101,300. What's it being anticipated for this increase?
A big jump there is the travel associated with this World Hydrogen Conference in Rotterdam, for which this will be our first year having presence there in terms of physical presence plus staff going. So I think there's about an additional 15 or so tied up with that, maybe a little bit more, plus, again, extra conferences. Before, we haven't had people attending for the last few years. This year, there's been an increased presence, especially in PDAC, OTC, things like that.
Okay. And under purchase services, the increase there of another 40-some-odd thousand. What's being anticipated there?
You're saying purchased?
Purchase services, yeah.
Find the right one? Yeah. I got it. It's up by 5,000?
No.
202. Oh, sorry. I'll let Megan jump in with her. Phil, jump in with that one.
Megan Nesbitt. That's for the World Hydrogen Conference as well.
Okay. And property and furnishings and equipment. $56,000 was spent, so which is only $6,600 budget. What would this have included?
I think this year, and correct me if I'm wrong, there was IT equipment had to be replaced, including down in the, I'm not sure what floor, it was a map plotter and a map scanner, as well as divisional laptops and monitors. So it was a big year for equipment replacement.
Under the revenue portion there, provincial, could you give an overview of the revenue? Like last year was $98,000 anticipated, $166,000 was generated. What was the full amount not received? And I guess what makes up that other $86,000?
So this comes down to revenue coming from delegates at various conferences. One would be OTC in Houston. There was less than anticipated revenue for the EMMC, which is the Energy and Mines Ministers Conference, which was held in July. So that's basically the FPT. There was less money paid because there were fewer people attended due to various reasons. I think one being summer, number two, possibly some COVID hangover, and number three, I do think there was some elections that had been held or were about to be held, and you saw less presence.
Excuse me. That's all my questions for that section, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. 1.1.01 to 1.2.03, MHA Brown.
Thank you, Chair. First wonder, Minister, how many current vacancies exist in the department and how many current positions are unfilled or new positions are going to be created at this current time?
Megan Nesbitt, we currently have 66 vacancies, and there was 13 new hires in the last fiscal year.
Perfect. That's my only question for this section. Thanks.
Thank you. If the committee is ready for the question.
Just one.
Sorry. On this same section?
Yeah.
Okay. MHA Penn.
Minister, just one final wrap-up on that conference in Rotterdam at the Archdiocese Conference. Would you be able to give me a bottom line figure how much that conference is going to cost in total, including line items? Like, what do you estimate that conference will cost?
$190,000.
Not cheap.
None of them are, sadly.
That's it for me, Mr.
Thank you. If the committee is ready for the question, shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.03 carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. I'll have the clerk call the next set of subheads, please.
Mining and Mineral Development, 2.1.01 to 2.1.03 inclusive.
Shall 2.1.01 to 2.1.03 inclusive carry? MHA Patton.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, last year in estimates there was discussion about the possible updating of the Mineral Act and the Mining Act. Is this something the department is looking at, and if so, what updates or changes are you considering?
Absolutely. We've been doing work on both the Minerals Act, I guess you could say, as well as the quarry legislation. I'll double-check with the deputy here for the timeline. I think the quarry legislation, we put out a what we heard document based on the consultation, and we're anticipating, is that the fall or spring?
Yeah.
Anticipating fall legislation coming. Can't get into too much of it yet, obviously, because we haven't put it out there. But you will see fall legislation on that. On the Mining Act, I think we're a little bit, we're in the what we heard session now, or we've gotten some information back. Maybe I can jump in with the ADM who's been involved in that.
Alex Smith. Yes, we just last week posted a what we heard document that resulted from our public consultations in the fall on the Mineral Act and the Mining Act. We're currently going through internal consultations within government departments on those acts. And once we get that input, we'll look at the policy and see what changes might be prudent.
Thank you. Yeah, last year, there was also discussion about equity in the mining industry, and at that time, there was no discussion regarding equity taking place. Is this still the case? Has any mining operators approached government for an equity investment?
So there hasn't really been an internal conversation on that. As it stands right now, the province does have money tied up in CFI in St. Lawrence, which hasn't changed. That one currently is in a CCAA process, which we'll see. I guess the next step is anticipated in May. It is a court process, a quasi-bankruptcy process that we'll see where that comes from. We have had other companies discuss the possibility of investment, but it's one of those things where we haven't got a policy for or against. It depends on each situation. We have not made any investments in equity in the last 12 months. There's nothing on the agenda. If anything, we've tried to show that we're supportive of the industry, but in many cases, we're better off doing that through geoscience, through junior exploration grants, things like that, rather than taking direct equity in a company. I don't know if I have anything else to add on that.
Thank you. Do you have any projections on what the price of iron ore is expected to do this year? As I know, the last fiscal year, the province took in $1.3 billion in corporate income tax, which was much more than originally anticipated. Partially because the price of iron ore and corporate income tax collected as a consequence of the price. And can you comment probably on the price of iron ore and expect a trend?
Alex Smith. Our current forecast for shipments shows a slight decline for 2023, and that is based on the expected decline in the price of iron ore. Long term, given concerns with the green economy and the characteristics of the iron ore out of Lab West, it's very high concentration, low impurities, and very beneficial for making a greener steel. So we expect a continued premium for the products that come out of the province.
Thank you. Under 2.1.01, the geological surveys. Is the $1 million for Labrador specific geoscience contained in these line items? And if so, how much is the $1 million, that $1 million breakdown among the line items?
Andrew Parsons. So it's my understanding that a portion of that is in the salaries section, and I believe it may also be distributed throughout a bunch of different line items. But I can toss it over to, I don't know if Alex or Phil or somebody that might be able to give a better breakdown of where that each one lies.
Alex Smith. Yes, it is contained within each line item. It includes the necessary expenses for the field work, helicopter support, travel supplies, lab supplies. The exact amounts in each one. There's an initial 4,000 under employee benefits, an additional 428,000 under transportation and communication. Majority of that is helicopter time. There's an additional 40,000 under supplies, an additional 650,000. Oh, that's not correct. There's nothing under professional services, and there's an additional 100,000 under purchase services related to very specific an analysis that might be done from samples collected through the program.
Under salaries, this year's salary budget for geological survey is planned to increase to $3.15 million. Can you give an explanation of why?
Alex Smith, that salary increase, a portion of that is the negotiated increase, but it also includes the salary for the Labrador-specific geoscience program.
And how many people would be involved? Would you, that salary, how many people that, do you have an idea how many people that covers?
Sorry, for the survey itself?
Yeah,
well, or the for salary, the geoscience program?
Yeah, well, the salary, you said it's for the survey is planned to increase, right? So I guess it's budgeted for the survey, geological survey. So how many people would be involved in that salary amount?
So the increase is the geoscience program has four additional positions, three geologists, three, one geologist, two. And there's also some temporary salary in there for students in the summer to support the field program.
Okay. The transportation communication budget is being increased to $822,900. Can you please outline what work will this will support?
Alex Smith. Again, the increase is solely related to the geoscience program and a majority of that increase is related to helicopter time in Labrador, where Labrador is so remote. To do the field work, you need helicopter support. Okay.
And supplies, the same thing, the increase of 182,000.
Alex Smith, yes, again, supplies would include supplies for the field, but also supplies for the lab to do the analysis that comes out of the work.
Under professional services, the budget for professional services has been increased to $654,000. Can you outline what professional services this will be for and what will be the goals of these additional funds?
Alex Smith. So in December, it was announced through ACOA, we created a critical minerals geoscience and exploration assistance program. And with input from ACOA of $650,000, which is actually reflected in the revenue down below. So that money in our budget is within professional services to carry out airborne geophysical surveys. So that's there for 2 years.
Okay, thank you. The purchase services, the budget has been increased to $299,000, almost $300,000. What work will this support?
Alex Smith. Again, it's related to the Labrador-specific geoscience program. A majority of this increase in purchase services is related to laboratory costs for analysis that our lab is incapable of doing.
Thank you. Under revenue, the $650,000 in federal revenue is expected. Can you tell me what that's for?
Alex Smith. Again, that's the ALCOA money coming in to fund the Airborne Geophysical Survey.
Okay. Could you provide a list of the projects that will take place this year for the geological survey?
Alex Smith, certainly. In Labrador, we've got work planned in four different areas. There's a series of projects in the Hopedale, Central Labrador area that we're doing in partnership with the Nunatsiavut government and the Geological Survey of Canada. There's a project in the Schefferville area looking at iron and critical minerals in that area. Another project in the southeast coast towards Port Hope Simpson, looking at critical minerals. And then in the northern coastal Labrador, we're doing a test of artificial intelligence that would require some field work to verify what comes out of those that analysis.
Thank you.
The island. Do you
want okay, carry
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I'll we've take got some stop, work on sorry. The island as well. There's a series of projects on critical minerals along the south coast. Critical minerals in granite. That's where the lithium was found there a year or so ago. So following up on that, doing work with the Geological Survey of Canada. There's a project on the west coast in the Corner Brook Bay of Islands area, again with the Geological Survey of Canada on critical minerals. We're continuing to do the work on gold in the central area. And there is a project in the Buran to field verify the Airborne Geophysical Survey that we did a year or so ago. And then the Airborne Geophysical Survey that's in the budget is we're looking at doing it to the north of the survey we did 2 years ago.
Thank you. 2.1.01 to 2.1.03 inclusive, MHA Brown.
Thank you so much, Chair. The first question I'll ask is, how many stakes were claimed last year, and for the number of mineral stakes claims, how many are result in future investment or mining projects currently on the books?
Staked last year was 28,000 mineral claims. That's down from over 100,000 in 2021, but still a significant number of claims staked. You know, we would hope that each of these would result in exploration programs, and hopefully some will be successful and progress down towards development.
Deputy Minister. Under the current junior exploration program, how many uptakes you got this year for that?
Alex Smith. Sorry, just one sec.
No worries.
So our mineral exploration assistance program has two parts to it. There's the junior exploration assistance program, and we are just now cluing up the payments and the analysis to get payments out for this past fiscal year. We're looking at supporting 37 projects under the Junior Exploration Assistance Program. And then the other work we do is the Prospectors Assistance Program. And we've got 39 contribution agreements that we will make payments towards this fiscal year.
Is that up or down from the previous years?
Alex Smith. The Prospectors Assistance Program is on par with previous years. 37, 38, 39 is typical.
Yeah.
Junior exploration assistance was up last year at 31 and is up again this year at 37.
Currently right now with the program, the critical minerals plan that's currently underway, is that going to be made a public document or is that going to be an internal document?
Alex Smith. So we are, I'm on a roll here.
You go, brother.
Yeah, so we're currently preparing a document to outline how we're going to do public consultations on a critical mineral strategy. We'd expect consultations to kick off, you know, in the next month. And as with any other consultations we do, we will summarize what we hear in a what we heard document. And then ultimately the strategy would be public facing for sure.
If I could just jump in on that excellent answer. What I would suggest is part of this challenge is ensuring that the globe is aware of what we have here. So the more publicity that we can attract to the province and possibilities here is a positive. Not sure if there'd be any commercial sensitivity parts of it, but the plan itself would definitely, as the ADM said, have to be a public document. But it is right now good that we're getting a lot of attention from other jurisdictions, including the U.S., on where we're going.
Perfect. Thank you. Under the Junior Miners Program, have they asked for more assistance, or are they, or what you're hearing is they're content with the current thing, or are you hearing that they would like, you know, a larger plan or a different plan or anything like that?
Alex Smith. So I think with any assistance program, you know, they'd always like more.
Yeah.
But in December, along with the Airborne Geophysical Survey work we're doing with ECOA, as part of the Critical Minerals Geoscience and Exploration Assistance Program, we're also getting $1.3 million additional junior exploration assistance money that will be targeted at projects that have critical minerals as a primary or secondary exploration target. So it wouldn't support gold exploration, but would support copper, cobalt, nickel exploration.
MHA, or sorry, Minister Parsons.
If I could add on to that, I can tell you that when I meet with the Prospectors Association and Norm Mercer and team, I have not had a meeting yet where they didn't come in asking for more. Every single meeting, but it's kind of a running joke now. We've had a lot of productive meetings.
Yeah.
They come in usually with a big agenda of things we want to do, and we've been pretty responsive to their asks. But anyways, it's a good relationship that we have with them, actually.
Yeah, I know. I've met with some of the ones in Labrador, and the same thing is, you know, a little bit more would be nice, they keep saying to me. A little bit more would be nice.
Absolutely.
But, you know, prospectors, they're an interesting group in themselves. Under 2.1.03, under grants and subsidies, there's a large increase going forward. What's that related to?
Alex Smith. Again, that's the Critical Minerals Geoscience and Exploration Assistance Program, where we're working with ECOA to provide an additional $1.3 million in junior exploration assistance targeting critical minerals.
Perfect. And the federal revenue in that section?
Alex Smith. Again, that $1.3 million is the ECOA money that's funding that additional.
Okay, so ECOA will be funding that extra piece there. Perfect. Thank you so much. That's all my questions for that section.
Thank you. Any further? MHA Panton, 2.1.01 to 2.1.03 inclusive.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Under 2.1.02 in mineral lands, under salaries, please provide an overview of the salaries line item. Last year's $1.3 million budgeted, $1.4 million spent. This year, the budget is planned for $1.4 million. So what's the extra? Is that salary increases?
Alex Smith?
That's my own question.
the increases to this year's budget is salary increases. The overance from last year is related to a couple of temporary positions that we have in processing the backlog of mineral assessment reports, as well as some work on quarries.
And under purchase services, it went over by $140,000.
Alex Smith. So when claims are staked, the fees are paid online. So that overage is related to Moneris fees for claim staking.
Yeah, he's doing a good job. Yeah, no doubt about it. 2.1.03 under salaries there. Mineral development, there was salary savings, actually, of $145,000. But 2023-24, the budget's increased to a total of $1.352 million. Please provide some information what's happening here.
Alex Smith, again, the increase is related to negotiated salary increases. The decrease in salary is related to some challenges we have filling technical positions. For instance, there's a mineral development engineer position that's been vacant for a couple of years, and just found out last week that we've succeeded in filling that position. So hopefully we'll spend the full salary this year.
Okay. Under professional services, professionals went over budget by $20,000. $115,000 was spent. What happened there?
Alex Smith. So we have $100,000 budgeted for maintenance of the dams at the orphaned and abandoned mine sites. That's broken down as $55,000 professional services and $45,000 in purchase services. But we tend to, depending on the work that needs to be done, that money may be spent under either professional or purchase services. So the work done this year was with consultants. We did a dam breach analysis at the Holbrook site, as well as we had some advice on just general dam safety issues from a consultant as well.
Okay. So, Marner, well, like, Transportation Communications is $30,000, so I'm assuming that would be from conferences or an increase. Salary savings, sorry. Sorry, I misread that. This is salary savings in Transportation Communications of $29,000.
Alex Smith, that's made up of several items. With the vacancies that we had, there was some decreased travel associated with site visits and such. We have some helicopter money in there to access the Holbrook mine site, but we're able to hitch a ride with an exploration company, so saved about $10,000 on that.
Okay. My colleague. My colleague from Exploits got a couple of questions. He's not quite ready, but I think he's getting there now.
I'm up now. Anyway, just go back to the list of projects. You were giving us a list of projects across the island. Just wondering in central Newfoundland if we could get a breakdown of those actual projects.
Alex Smith, how would you define central?
Okay. Well, you did say there was central. We're doing gold.
Alex Smith. Yeah, so there's three projects. The descriptions have big words that I have a hard time pronouncing in them, but one is in the northeast dunnage zone. I'd examine regional outcrops in the northeastern zone, active and collaborate with active gold exploration companies. Another is a Golden Bay project where we're doing some site visits with Canstar Resources, and then we're going to go to the True Precious Metals Golden Rose project to examine relationships between the poorly understood regional host rocks and looking at copper, gold, silver, and then it sort of ties into the Marathon area as well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. If the committee is ready for a question, shall 2.1.01 to 2.1.03 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. I'll get the clerk to call the next set of subheads, please.
Energy development, 3.1.01 to 3.1.09 inclusive.
Shall 3.1.01 to 3.1.09 inclusive carry? MHA Pitt.
Thank you, Chair. The Labrador Island Link is still experiencing trouble. Is there any update available on this?
So I can start off with that. I think they've done some testing over the last week or so, including over the weekend, and that testing, fingers crossed, has been successful. I think Sunday was both poles tested at 500 megawatts, I believe. My understanding is now on Thursday they are going to go up to 675 or 700, which is a absolutely crucial test. So right now everything is looking good. I'm very knocking on wood
cautiously.
Here. Very cautiously optimistic that we'll have positive results on Thursday and then over the weekend. So see where we are there.
Good. Nice to hear. The fiscal framework announced for the wind energy is for hydrogen wind production. Will there be a framework announced for any industry that wishes to use wind to product electricity and export it using the traditional means, like transmission lines?
So basically, yes, the fiscal framework that we have put together now has basically been done on an export basis. So the next phase of this, you know, at some point, where how do we take wind and electricity generated and incorporated into our current system? That has not been determined yet. There's a lot of work that has to be done around that, and then we will have to figure out, I don't know if it's so much a fiscal framework as what's the purchase price? What is the offtake going to be for that? What does it cost you to generate? You know, what is the reliability, and then how does that work? So that's definitely something that's in the pipeline, along with when you think about electricity generation and transmission as a whole. That's a big, not just a big global topic, it's a big topic here as well as in other jurisdictions. So in our case, we have the benefit of saying that we have assets we can develop mainly for use here, but as well as for export. Other provinces are worried about decarbonization, getting off coal, and figuring out how are they going to acquire electricity. Quebec, as many people know, is talking about whether, you know, what their future plan is. Their premier's indicated publicly that he wants to build. So everybody's sort of in that thing now. What, you know, where wind fits into that is to be determined. Right now, basically, the wind side of this is definitely for the export opportunities.
Thank you. there's another question about the electricity grid. We want people to move away from all heat and move to electricity. From all heat, move to electricity. There's also movement to incentivize EVs. But can our electricity grid in the province sustain all this? And how much more of a load can the transmission lines carry?
John Cowan, no, absolutely. So Newfoundland Labrador Hydro is, planning. They're going to reliability resource adequacy study. So in terms of the system, they're planning for, I guess, increased electrification on the system. So constantly planning, looking at existing assets that they may need in the future, be it the Beta Spare number 8, extra unit in Beta Spare. So yes, the system can handle, I guess, the existing load and the increase in, with electrification. So yes.
So right now, I mean, there's no doubt that we have to keep our eye on future industrial development opportunities, as well as, you know, moving in some cases, we talk about especially Labrador and remote sites where there's diesel, but at the same time comes the need for, we talk a lot about wanting to move to renewables, but we also have to deal with reliability. One of the big things I think that has guided hydro, especially in the last 10 years, is the Dardanelles situation, where we want to move forward, but we cannot compromise reliability for the renewable side, which is the challenge, plus the fact that in many cases the renewables are fiscal challenge when it comes to production, which is often cases why we still have diesel situations. So right now there's a bunch of different opportunities. As the DM mentioned, there's Beta Spare, there's possibility of upgrades at Churchill, there's possibilities of upgrade. Well, Gull Island is always there as a consideration. Everybody knows the asset that's there. The development is a whole nother story. So we're in an enviable position when we go outside, in the sense that we have the opportunities here. It's just about the planning and the design and then the production of this. At the same time, knowing that, you know, you do have EV increases, you know, coming in. We have increased numbers of that. We have to electrify. Then talking, you know, when it comes to home heating programs and things like that. So it's a constant mix with different inputs and outputs. But the thing that makes me feel good is that we're not in the same challenge as other provinces have, where they are going to be forced to bring it in from elsewhere, whereas we have the possibility of production here, which is definitely a better spot to be, I think.
Okay, thank you. Are there any conversations happening regarding offshore wind energy?
Yes, absolutely. So just in the last 2 weeks, we signed the offshore, basically, regional assessment study with the federal government, us and Nova Scotia. The difference being that the offshore wind is similar to offshore oil in the sense that it is a dual jurisdiction. We have to work with the federal government. So part of that, I think, is an 18-month process. Paid for by the feds, but involving indigenous consultation with industry, experts, communities, you name it. The other side is, yes, we do have industry itself that has expressed interest in our offshore. So that is a constant conversation within our department, but they also know that right now it has to go through that process with the federal government. So a lot of it is doing the parallel planning. Let's do the work while that's going on. Instead of waiting for this to come, we need to move forward now. The other good thing about offshore is that we do have, as opposed to onshore, fiscal regimes, which were difficult to craft. Offshore, we have a lot of precedent. We can just look at Scotland, other places like that. There's a lot of precedent to look at to see how they do it. So it's exciting. It's not as busy, we'll say, as onshore right now, but it is a definite subject and opportunity.
It's on the radar, I'm sure. Mr. the Atlantic Loop, I know the federal budget speech mentioned it, but they never mentioned Newfoundland and Labrador, which I found ironic. Is there any update on that?
Yeah, so what I would tell you is that similar to when the loop was actually announced a few years back, it was a bit of a surprise. We had never heard the term. It was something they crafted up. So when that budget announcement came, I would say it was a bit of a surprise to us, considering our team is still in consultations and conversations with the feds and other provinces on the loop. You'd have to ask the federal government why the province name was not there. That's a great question for them. What I would say, though, is it's hard to talk about a loop or getting people off coal when you don't factor Newfoundland and Labrador in. So, you know, we're here. We're going to continue on. We've got a lot of irons in the fire, and we'll let them explain why or why not. I almost don't care that the name wasn't there in the federal budget document, because without us, I don't think anything really moves forward for the other provinces. That's just me.
It kind of be oval, wouldn't it? Wouldn't be a real loop, would it? Huh?
They're going to have to change the terminology.
Yeah, I appreciate that. On March 17th, the province announced a review of the oil and gas assets. Any idea when this will be completed or made public?
So there's no deadline on it per se. The Rothschild, who were commissioned, did do the initial review. Now this moves forward into part two. I would suggest that my MO is always to make everything as public as possible to allow for the avoidance of transparency questions. What's the point of having anything done where people question me on being secretive? I mean, I've been on both sides of that. It's an easy target. That being said, this one is complicated by the fact that we do not want to compromise our fiscal position or our advantage by disclosing commercial information out to buyers. I mean, if we are taught, right now we're looking at, we have equity, we have opportunity. What is it worth? What is the valuation currently? And even that valuation has changed in the last 2 years. The valuation in August of 2020 was far different than what the valuation will be in August of 2023. So it's one of those things, it's like anything, any asset you have, there comes a time where you should consider looking at whether it's an opportunity to sell or not sell. And there's a bunch of different factors baked into that. So right now, I don't have anything to offer except to say that I think the value has increased. I think just based on a number of factors, when you look at the industry as a whole in the last 24 months, we'll wait to see what comes back. So I'll make as much public as I can, but not at the detriment of compromising if there was a sale or opportunity, doing something to lessen that, because the equity is owned by the province, and by province we mean everybody.
Thank you. Given the review that the review of oil and gas ongoing, is borrowing equity in future products like projects like Bay du Nord, is that something that you're considering?
So we do have an opportunity to buy equity in the Bay du Nord project. There has not been a decision made on that yet. So I don't want to compromise or harm any current discussions or negotiations going on. The big thing is that there is the opportunity should we take it. Any decision on that will be based on a number of factors, primarily what is the overall value to the province and what is the long-term outlook of that, because by taking equity we have to look at the long term when the asset is done, then there's decommissioning and all these other things, plus the fact that we've seen enough volatility in this market. I mean, just over the last 10 years we've had a couple times when that value has gone down. So we have to base it on long term assessments, which are difficult at best, especially in a time of transition where it's gotten more volatile. So We'll do an assessment. There'll be a bunch of people way smarter than me that'll look and say, do we think it's a good investment to take for the province? And the decision will be made and then go from there. But right now, it's there's no decision.
Thank you. 3.1.01 to 3.1.09, inclusive, MHA Brown.
Thank you, Chair. Has there been significant progress made on any decisions to upgrade the any of our current electrical hydroelectric facilities like Churchill Falls or Bay de Spear?
So I'll lead off on that, but I'll leave it to John to follow up since he's also been in touch with hydro, probably more regular than me in terms of officials to officials. So right now there have been a lot of conversations as it relates to possible upgrades like, say, Bay de Spear 8, Churchill, Gaul, which is a whole much bigger conversation as opposed to upgrades, we'll say, to other places. Plus Holyrood itself is a constant conversation in terms of its of the necessity of it to keep us, in light for the, ongoing future. Each one is based on what is the work, that's entailed there. What is the capital cost of that versus what is the output of that? For instance, Bay de Spear probably comes with a lower price tag, but also a lower output. Whereas Churchill probably comes with an over $1 billion price tag, but probably over 1,000 megawatts as well. Gaul itself is, like, I don't consider Gaul in the same conversation, but Gaul, over 2,000, probably the most attractive undeveloped hydroelectric asset in North America, which is why it generates so much attention, but comes with a plethora of issues, including the fact that we would require negotiation with our with Innu governments and other indigenous governments to see where that goes. So right now, I know hydro is really in the thick of it, especially when it comes to Bay de Spear. Let John add some context to all this.
John Cowan, yeah, so in terms of Bay de Spear, so I mean, hydro continues to invest in the penstock. So it's a fairly robust program there, and it's certainly in the tens of millions of dollars. In terms of Upper Churchill, so in terms of the greater upgrades of the facility, no. But I mean, I know over the last number of years, they've upgraded some of the runners to improve the efficiency of the plant and also have a very, robust maintenance program to make sure that the asset is maintained, so.
Bert, thank you so much. Related to offshore winds or anything like that, I know you're going through the process with the federal government, but there's also any discussions on what kind of the bidding process would look like in that, where that's going to be a part of that plan.
So we haven't moved that far down the path yet, although I would guess that it will not be exactly the same as onshore. And the good news is that we do have precedent to use, both in our offshore oil regime that we've gone through, as well as the fact that other jurisdictions, I look at Scotland now, which makes more from its offshore wind bid process than it makes from its offshore oil bid process. So while we're not there yet, I think we have a lot of different places to look for guidance in that, along with the fact that I think we need to let the regional assessment play out a little bit. So, because obviously that has to factor in how we go down that road.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much. Regarding onshore wind farms, has there any been discussion or any policy work done on if they want to connect to our main grid, who would pay for the connection and the upgrades required?
So that is an ongoing conversation as to basically we talk about next phases. So the first part you have to consider is the grid itself and what the grid can take, what the grid can handle in terms of input from onshore wind sources. The second part is, does it require extra transmission? What's the cost? The third part is, what's the cost to produce it? I mean, it's fine and dandy if you're going to produce it, and it's going to cost us far more than what we're already paying. I don't know if that's a conversation. In many cases in other jurisdictions, they are being subsidized because the cost is much higher, but it's the process of decarbonization, lower emissions, whereas in this case, we're far ahead of most provinces in terms of the greening of the grid, and we see it more as an economic development opportunity rather than the necessity of getting off coal and things like that. So there's a lot of work to be done. I would suggest it would be led by the department in conjunction with Newfoundland Labrador Hydro. They are a big part of this, as well as whatever resources we need. So, like I say, I think there is work ongoing for that being done by Hydro in terms of what can we take in. We'll see what comes from that.
Perfect, thank you. And speaking of decarbonization, can we get an update on the actualization of the renewable energies plan and how it's currently unfolding?
Just say that one again, Jordan, sorry.
The rollout of the renewable energy plan that was released, how is that going? Can we get an update on that?
Well, this is a good opportunity to let Susan Wilkins, the executive director, talk about it because she is the brains behind the operation.
Susan Wilkins. We've made significant progress in the first year of the Renewable Energy Plan with lifting the wind moratorium, announcing the Crown Land nomination and bid process, signing a letter of intent with the City of Hamburg, extensive consultations with industry and our stakeholders. There were 21 actions in the first year. The department has decided to include the update of the Renewable Energy Plan within an overall energy update, and that will be released in the coming weeks.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Another question on there would be, was it there? Okay. Another one I'm going to mention there is Twin Falls site, the abandoned power plant there. And I know that from my understanding that it needs to be cleaned up or anything like that. Is the department going to be involved in the cleanup of that site?
Is that an ECC question?
Cleanup would be ECC.
So I don't have any current info to pass on to you there, but I would imagine if there's cleanup involved, that it would likely fall to Minister Davis and ECC as well to be a part of that conversation.
Yeah.
So that's something we can take offline and get you an update on. I don't have anything here to provide you, but no issue trying to get you the most recent. But I do think, I can't imagine we would be the sole responsibility of that I think Bernie Schott would have to be involved.
Yeah, no, the last report was from the Natural Resources Department in 2011, I believe it was. So I just wanted to get an update on that. So I just wanted, because the report was from you guys, but I guess I don't know if it gets kicked over to environment. But
so much has changed.
I know. Right? Perfect. But anyway, I appreciate that. I'm with my time there now. Also, can we get an update on the natural gas plan and the bringing natural gas ashore?
Yep, so I can lead off on that, and then I'll toss to Craig or Nina to give maybe a more specific update. The big thing is that with the budget, 2023 budget, we are moving forward with a natural gas resource sort of study, which would basically be, I think it's the first time in some time that we're actually committing funds to see what are the opportunities. Obviously, it's a big conversation nationally and internationally. In the sense that there is absolutely a demand and projected to still be a demand for the ongoing future. In other provinces, we have to deal with jurisdictional issues, including pipelines crossing borders and things like that. We feel we have an opportunity there to work for it. We do know that the operators themselves, for probably the first time in a while, are certainly playing ball and being helpful to the process. It wasn't always the case. That was not where their business lined up. That was not where their heads were. So we've committed, I think, in the range of like $4.6 or $5 million to do the study. So what, I mean, that money obviously hasn't been spent yet. We had to go through RFPs and see who's going to come in. But I'll let the Craig or Nina, whoever wants to take it and run with it.
Craig Martin. So as the minister indicated, we've got money in this year's budget for the natural gas resource assessment. That's going to focus on the Jeanne d'Arc Basin to look at the actually quantifying the resources available out there. The other piece that's still ongoing, actually, is the natural gas royalty as well. That's we had Van Muir's engaged this past year in terms of providing advice on that particular royalty, and plans are to start doing public consultation later this year with respect to that royalty. So essentially the goal here is to have the resource assessment done, the royalty that in place, so it's up in the window in order to attract the interest and investment.
Perfect, thank you so much, ADM. Going forward with that, so do you have a timeline of roughly when you think you have this study complete, or some kind of what we heard kind of thing in that, or is that the timeline a bit broad there?
Craig Martin. So this study is going to happen over the course of this fiscal year. So the results of this are going to be likely early next fiscal year in terms of release. So right now, as the minister indicated, there's about $4.8 million there. The bulk of that is salaries for staff in order to do the assessment, and also to acquire the data to do the assessment, the seismic data.
All right, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 3.1.01 to 3.1.09 inclusive, MHA Penton.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. In oil and gas, could you give us an update on the Bull Arm and what activities now taking place there and what's planned for the years ahead?
So I can lead off by saying that Bull Arm has recently been notified that DF Burns has acquired work on the Terra Nova, additional work that was required when she came back from Spain. I just met with Bull Arm and DF Burns last week, I believe, so I'm waiting on updated numbers. I think that's an evolving target when it comes to Terra Nova and what the actual work scope is. The good news, though, is that Bull Arm is going to be busy for the next little while, plus the fact that it was busy prior to the Terra Nova going over. There was some quayside work being done there. I'll toss it to Nina maybe to add a little more substance to that and what's going on.
Nina Abondo. As the minister said, DF Burns has a contract to do work on the Terra Nova FPSO, so that'll be happening soon. DF Burns also has a number of other contracts out there. They're cold stacking the Henry Goodrich, and that contract is there for another year, so that rig is probably not going anywhere, so it is just cold stack. Transocean has it out there, but they've got that there for another year. They also have a contract for the module hall and generation shops for the laydown for staging of sea drill components. That ends later this month, actually. And there's also a couple of leases by Kelson and Kelson that it's tied to work the refit for the Brea refinery. So they actually have warehousing and the paint and blast building. There's been a fair bit of interest in the site most recently, obviously for potential Beta Nord work, but also there's been a lot of companies that have been touring the site and interested in it for potential wind development, hydrogen wind developments.
Thank you. There's also been a recent RFP for the issue for some work on the module hall roof replacement. Also, there's work done some 2-3 years ago. So is there any, refresh my memory on what repair work was being done at the Bull Arm, what has been done previously?
Nina Bundo. For this upcoming year, they've got a capital budget of around $3 million, and the plans are to replace the roof on the module hall and also some piping replacement and upgrades for the chlorination building.
Thank you. Any insight into West White Rose project? Is there an update when production may begin?
West White Rose? I do have an update. The concrete pour, I've got to read this because it's a bit more technical. For the conical slip, for the CGS began on March 27th, and it's expected to last about 60 days. It's going to take the inner shaft of the CGS from its current 46.85 meter height to 139.2 meters. And it's going to, so following that operation, they're going to carry out work to complete the top of the shaft, and that's going to take about 4 months. And right now, there's about 1,200 Trades NL workers on site, as well as other management. And Trades NL is expecting that actually to increase between 15 to 1,800 people in the coming months.
Massive structures, isn't it? Amazing. Is there an update on the Beta Nord project, and when we can expect an update on the benefits agreement with the proponent and the province?
So this one is still a day-to-day topic, and when I say that, we are literally meeting and talking with Equinor on a day-to-day basis. I think there's meetings scheduled. There's meetings last week. There's meetings this week, and we are dealing with the framework agreement. Don't want to say much more than that, except to say that we have heard from multiple people, whether it's the opposition, whether it is Trades NL, Energy NL, you know, regular Newfoundlanders and Labradorians. This is something we hear from. So it would be fair to say that our mindset has been guided by what we are hearing. I mean, it's hard not to. I mean, long and short is that we feel this is a Newfoundland and Labrador project. We've ensured that Equinor gets that message. They are a Norwegian company. So if you were to build something in Norway, you would expect Norwegians to work. If we're building this in Newfoundland and Labrador, this is a Newfoundland and Labrador project. We want Newfoundlanders and Labradorians to be the primary beneficiary of that. We continue to work on it. They've, you know, there's been regular contact. Can't say much else. I've done as good a job I can of not negotiating in public, which I don't think is to our benefit, as hard as it is sometimes, because it is something that people want to know about, and I don't blame them for that. So we continue to go at it. We've heard loud and clear from people. Any decision we make, we feel we want to get the best value for this. It's a huge, huge opportunity for a lot of reasons. I mean, this is going to be the newest one done. It's going to be different than what has been done in the past. And when you look at discoveries there and the fact that Equinor is doing more drilling, there's a lot of opportunities. So it's ongoing. We've been at the table. We've been extremely responsive. It's credit for that I give to the team. Whenever there's correspondence exchanged, there's immediate follow-up. And I'll give Equinor credit. They want to make this work too. They are like any entity. They want to get the best value for themselves. That's to be expected. That's not a philanthropic organization. None of them are. So we'll continue to work together, and hopefully, I would love nothing more than to find a positive announcement soon, but we had to let the process continue to play out.
Thank you, Minister. And we appreciate and support your position, so as you're well aware, but thanks for that update. With due respect to Bay du Nord, is the clarity on how the royalty under the UN law to sea will be paid?
Not yet. UNCLOS is still something that is a day-to-day consideration. This will be the first project ever that would be subject to UNCLOS. We've made our position clear to the federal government that we feel it's on them, not on us. And we also would be supportive of the fact that we don't want to see a project which, each of these projects, when you talk to proponents, are economically, you know, challenged. They have to make it, you know, economically feasible. Adding this in does not do that. So there has been no decision made on that. We've put our position forward clearly and in writing on numerous occasions. I've spoken about it publicly to the feds. That's how we feel. So there is no resolution as of yet. Still continues on, still an active conversation and topic.
Thank you. Some line by lines. Under 3.1.01 in energy policy, salaries. Budget for salaries is planned to increase to $1.89 million. What's the reason for this, I guess, and what positions are being added, or are there positions being added?
Absolutely. On two fronts here. One is the negotiated salary increases, which form a part of this, as well as we've added a number of positions under the renewable energy division. I'll ask Susan how many are coming in. 10 new positions to deal with this emerging front that previously hadn't been done within the structure. Because of the opportunities presented, we've increased that and sort of split them up, and it's led by Susan.
Okay, thank you. Transportation communications, I guess some context on the on that line. Last year it was 55,000 was budget and only 30,000 spent, but this year the budget increased to 105,000.
So we actually had, it's a combination of factors there. So we had less travel, because of the fact that the federal government was still doing work from home, so that changed some things. CNLPB was working from home, so there were fewer meetings, fewer, smaller amount of travel required. It's increased because of, A, the renewable energy team and costs associated with the travel they have to undertake, as well as a sum of that going towards registration for the World Hydrogen Summit.
Under professional services, there's an overview. Could you give me an overview of the planned budget increase to $491,000? What accounts for the increase we're seeing here?
I think the biggest portion of this is to support the ongoing operations of the renewable energy team that previously hadn't been contemplated.
Grants and subsidies, would this be the diesel subsidy? Is that correct?
I think the answer is yes to that one.
Okay. And Under revenue for federal, there's $80,000 expected but not received. What happened there?
I think that one is there was revenue expected to be received on a high efficiency wood stove feasibility study, and it was not received because the study did not go forward yet that I'm aware of. Okay. So we haven't received it.
Okay, thank you. Take my comments.
Thank you. 3.1.01 to 3.1.09, inclusive, MHA Brown.
Perfect, thank you. Under 3.1.02, the $4 million increase under purchase services, is this for the LNG study?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. All right. Under 3.1.03, for the CNLOPB board, the grant subsidies has increased. What's the reasoning for the increases to the board?
So twofold here. This is the additional operating requirements of the CNLOPB that they've indicated. Can probably get some further details soon. I would assume it has to do with an increase in the mandate. They're going to be going from CNLOPB to CNLOEB. That's my assumption. We'll follow up on that. The other thing to keep in mind, that it is a 100% cost recovery from industry. So, like I said, that's my understanding of why it's gone up.
Okay, so it's for their role is shifting, so they got to pay. They got to get new people.
Yeah, that's okay. My understanding.
All right, perfect. Under 3.1.04 royalties and benefits, the salary increases there.
That's the negotiated salary increases, I think, from previous years.
Okay. And obviously the increase in, no, let's say the same. All right, that will be everything for that section there. All right, perfect. One more. Under 3.1.05, there's a decrease in the grants and subsidies for oil and gas industry support. Is that from the coming of the end of the COVID
money? Old era, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So this was, you remember, we received some federal monies, oil and gas industry recovery assistance, or what we call OGIRA. We've reached the end of that. There's been some, and I'll let Nina talk about it, where like there's still some carryover that's going on. Nina could probably do a better job of me of explaining, but yep. That is the big, well, you see the big change there.
Nina Bondo. Yeah, basically that is that we thought that those funds would have been fully expended, but we were a little late starting when we first had the project, and some projects have had to extend timelines into the next fiscal year. So it is a combination of extended timelines and cash flow requirements. So the amount of money hasn't changed at all. It's just moved into this fiscal, but we've already had the money from the federal government to cover it, so it's just for cash flowing into this fiscal.
Perfect. Thank you. Just there, so with all this money that's obviously that's out, has every project been paid now, or are still some hang-ups on paying out, or this should be the end, or everything has been paid yet?
I can't say everything's been done in full yet. Some of things will continue on, but it's more of just a natural evolution of certain projects having delays, a little bit late starting up. So the goal was we were supposed to have it all done, I think, by March of this year. I think we did get an extension on some cases. I think that, everything is winding down, and we'll have a review done of all the different projects.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Under 3.1.06, Oil and Gas Corporation, Glen Lever, last year was $19 million. Now it's down to $7 million. What is the, rationale behind the end of this?
So perhaps Phil can better explain, but if you look at slide 16 as well, you'll see on the, and 3.1.08,
okay.
You'll see Oil and Gas Corporation there where it went from $3.9 million up to $15 million. And so it's these two, sections are connected.
Okay.
Philip Ivney. Yeah, it's just a reprofiling of the funding there. So in the previous year, the funding for the seismic program was underneath 3.106. And for the current year, it will be under 3.108. So that's the difference there. It's just if you combine those two budget amounts, it's the exact same amount. It's just moving from one area to the other.
Okay, reprofilization. And I guess under 3.1.07 energy initiatives, I guess this is just a placeholder for some projects. And what was the project that cost $187 million?
So this is a combination of, this is energy initiatives. This was money that was received from the federal government. This is a portion of the money that we actually put into rate mitigation that we just put out the other day.
Okay.
This is where the funding came from.
Okay, and so there's nothing budgeted for this year on it. So is this just a one-time payment from the federal government or?
My understanding is that it's not anticipated, but we'll wait and see what comes up. It's hard to tell. I can't say for sure. And some of these here, we had to deal with finance as well. So we sort of wait and see what finance tells us.
Okay, so we should see an update later on this particular initiative.
Absolutely.
Speaking of rate mitigation on there, does it look like it'll be just lump sum payments from the federal government on this, or we have, like you said, would you have to wait and see every year now on what's going to happen there?
Yeah. So I think it's tied into net profit interest, which is the big component there. So I don't know if that's a clear amount every year. Obviously, I would imagine there'd be fluctuations to that amount, but that's where it's supposed to be coming from. I cannot tell you in terms of timelines or when the amount's calculated or figured out, but I would hope that every year there's an amount coming from that, which, you know, we have the option then to put into rate mitigation if it is required. That's one of the big components of that agreement that was made.
Okay, perfect. So we're not sure exactly how much every year, but it's based, I guess, off the Hibernia profit.
Yes.
Yeah. Got it. All right, perfect. Thank you there. All right, so that would be the last question for this section. Thanks.
Thank you. 3.1.01 to 3.1.09 inclusive, MHA Patton.
Thank you, Chair. Still under 3.1.01. Come by chance, can you provide any information on the current future of the refinery, especially as it relates to the switch to biofuels?
So from my understanding, I would lead off by saying excellent progress was being made. We all know that in September we had a tragic situation there, which for obvious reasons has delayed the progress, but it has not delayed the desire of Brea and partners to continue on with the project. But obviously there's a lot of work, investigation, dealing with the workers, everything combined. The good news is that I think from a project perspective, the amount of activity out there has been unprecedented. I mean, up to one point of 700 workers ongoing out there, to the point where when you're talking to the union, they've run out of workers and they've had to bring workers from elsewhere because the union simply didn't have anybody else to go to work, which is a good problem to have. So I think while there's been some delays, I don't know if John or Craig or somebody might know a little more in terms of deliverables, but what I can tell you is that the amount of expenditure out there is significant. Basically, everything's looking good, and I think there's possibly a milestone coming up in June in terms of moving on to the next phase.
Correct. And
John Cowan, I mean, I don't have a lot to add. I think they're targeting the fall for their first shipment.
Yeah. Good stuff. Under the revenue provincial, there's 21,100 received. Any idea, where did this come from?
I think, and I'll leave it to Phil to correct me if I'm wrong, they paid for something in U.S. dollars, and it was supposed to be paid in Canadian dollars, so we actually got the refund back from the vendor.
Perfect.
And all the credit goes to the creditor.
Fair enough. Minister, high efficiency wood stove study, is that going to be done this year?
Susan Wilkins. So we respected the NCC Research Advisory Council when they recommended the project not proceed. Rather, they would like a letter of support for future funding requests to the federal government.
Okay. Yeah. Under 3.1.02, petroleum development, we see a salary budget being increased to $1.7 million. So is that context, give some context, that being what staff are being added there?
So twofold, it's the negotiated salary increases as well as the funding to go along with the natural gas resource assessment. Not sure how many staff that encompasses. I don't know if we know that number, Craig.
Craig Martin, there are six additional positions associated with that, but they're not for the full year. They do come on a varying point over the course of the 12-month period.
Contractual?
Yes.
Okay. And employee benefits increased $24,000. I guess that just entails those contractual positions that you self heard.
Yes.
Transportation communications, some context on the transportation communications line. Last year, $50,000 was budgeted, only $35,000 was spent. This year's increased to $90,000.
Yep, so this is a combination of lower than anticipated travel last year for various reasons. I think the mining conference alone, which is generally held in March, and last year was held in June, which I think had an impact on attendance. And I could say from my own personal, going to the one last year in June, this year's in March. March's was way, way bigger. So just fewer people going. You'll see an increase there coming up, and that's for all the same reasons in terms, but especially the natural gas assessment transportation associated with travel that the team might have to take on that project.
Okay. On the professional services, what accounts for savings last year, and where will this year's money, does $64,000 be spent?
I think the generic response to that one is less than anticipated professional service requirements, but I don't know if I have a specific here. I think it's just not as much money going out.
No problem. Purchase services increased to $4.1 million. Can you explain what that's about?
That's solely, I believe, to go towards natural gas resource assessment. So I would assume that's the purchase services side of that. Craig might have some detail.
Craig Martin, that is the bulk. The bulk of that relates to the natural gas resource assessment. Two main expenses there. The purchase of the data is in the range of about $2.8 million, and then there's also software and software licensing required in the range of about $1.2
million. Okay, thank you. There's 3.1.05, oil and gas industry support. Budget documents list $50 million to continue for offshore exploration initiatives. Where would we see this in the estimates?
I believe that's in there, is it not?
It is. Yeah.
Craig Martin, yes, that's part of that amount. That amount, the $69 million, is essentially just about $7.3 million there for the oil and gas Geogira fund.
Yeah.
There's $50 million for the offshore exploration initiative,
okay.
And there's approximately $12 million there for the IBDF fund.
Okay, thank you very much. Grants and subsidies there, you say, can we get a breakdown of $189 million? How much of this was for innovation and business development fund, and how much was for oil and gas recovery fund? Is there a breakdown where this money went?
Greg Martin, so last year's budget was approximately $6 million for the IBDF and $180 million for the Yagira at that point.
Okay.
MHA 4C.
Back to the wind energy, land nominations closed March 23rd, I think it was. How many bids came in for exploits in that area?
That's not something we can release at this time. We're keeping, so basically all we've indicated right now is that we received 19 bids for a variety of areas throughout the province for commercial reasons and other information disclosure reasons. We're not putting out anything as of yet.
All right.
It, put it this way, it may affect the process going through, depending if we say who got what where, so we don't really want to affect the process as of yet.
I just didn't know if there was one, two, or whatever just come in for Central. I didn't know. I know there was, you mentioned 21 or 19.
Can't say anything else.
Fair enough.
I'd love to, yeah. I'll get myself in trouble.
All right, that's it for me.
Thank you. So if the committee is ready for the question, shall 3.1.01 to 3.1.09 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against?
Carried. I'll have the clerk call the next set of subheads, please.
Mr. Chair, maybe it's a good juncture before we start the next one if we can allow for the break for all members.
Absolutely. We'll take. Be back for 10:30, please.
Perfect.
Okay. Thank you, and welcome back to the estimates of the Department of Industry, Energy, and Technology. I'll ask the clerk to call the next set of subheads, please.
Business and Innovation, 4.1.01 to 4.3.01 inclusive.
Shall 4.1.01 to 4.3.01 inclusive carry? MHA Petten.
Thank you, Chair. I got a question. I guess what's the current coverage rate of cellular in the province? And I guess what's the current availability of broadband in the province?
So I don't have the cell number here. I don't know if Jason might be able to find it and track it down. On the broadband coverage, what I can say is with the recent FedProv investment of $136 million, I think the goal is by 2025 to have 98% or 99%. In fact, I think it's supposed to be less than 1,000 households that should not have that access. So the investment started now, the work has started, but the reality is it's going to take some time just with the engineering. If you don't have coverage by now, it's generally because it's a difficult engineering feat to get the coverage to some of these areas and increasing the fiber and things like that. On the cell coverage, we've got a few projects that are still in works in terms of small cell that we worked on with communities. I think there's a difference between community coverage and highway coverage. And I, for one, will still say that highway coverage is very frustrating, extremely frustrating. It's one, though, that there's a higher investment required. It's a smaller, not even economical business case. There's power concerns in terms of having the power to do it. It's just generally, and then when you look at the amount of roadway we have here, maybe Jason can follow up with some context on any numbers there that he can pass along.
So, Jason Higgins, when it comes to broadband, we've got 99% of residents have access to some type of service, but when it comes to high speed, we're at or about, probably slightly above 75% coverage now. But when you get to rural areas, that's where we start to see some of our challenges. So we're probably just above 50% coverage there, which has still been, you know, a slight improvement over time. As the minister alluded to, the major investment recently announced will get us up to 99% coverage by 2026, which will make a big difference. And again, as the minister alluded to, we've got about 1,000 households left, so they'll be the focus in the out years. When it comes to cellular, we've got, and again, as the minister alluded to, 95% coverage in our community, so the population is covered that way. But the challenges come on the roadways, some of the major highways and roadways. We're at or about 67%, and I'm using round numbers just for context. So that'll be a focus for us in the coming years as well.
And the budget lists $25 million over 4 years. Is there scheduled how much per year?
Yep, Jason Higgins. So what we anticipate now is $10 million in the coming year, $10 million in the year after that, and then 2.5 evenly in the next 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Under 4.1.01, some line by lines, professional services. You provide an overview of professional services which are purchased here. Specifically, what accounts for the increase in the budget, increasing to 428.5?
So a lot of this, when you see the changes in numbers this year, it's because we're hosting something called the Southeastern U.S. Canadian Province Alliance, or SEUS for short. So we're hosting that, I believe, in June or July of this year. It's our first time hosting since either 2009 or 2011. It's one of those, I get it confused. So basically, this is an alliance made up of Atlantic provinces, as well as Quebec, I believe, and a number of Southeast states. So you'll have a number of governors and premiers traveling here. It was held last year just outside Atlanta, I believe. It was in Georgia last year, the premier attended. So this year was our turn to host. So we've had to put, as you can tell, there in, I think it was an additional 23,000 in supplies, 155K under professional, about 309 under purchased. We are going to get, you'll see under revenue, about 300K from ACOA towards this. Then there's another 100 from the Atlantic Trade and Investment Growth Agreement, which is a Fed funding. We'll probably get about 132K, roughly, from sponsorships and registration fees. So that's the thing, is that there is going to be an investment required. We're getting, you know, money going out as well as money coming in. And this is one of those things where we probably won't have to host it again until at least another decade.
Grants and subsidies, could you provide some information regarding these grants and possibly list the recipients?
So what I would say is that there's one of those is for a shared commitment to economic development in Atlantic Canada with the Government of Canada, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and PEI, some promotion, development, startup of business networks, and some promotion of the competitive advantages of the province and target markets. And maybe Jason or Julian have so, Julian would have some further detail to provide on that.
Waiting for the light. Okay, there it is. Julian Ludmer, yes, a lot of this is going to be support for marketing, export-related initiatives, trade expansion, et cetera. So there are a large number of companies that would be supported. I believe in the last year we supported 70 companies, for example, to participate in trade shows and conferences. We helped them to prepare for those conferences, to promote their products, and to engage with other businesses to further their business expansion and trade expansion plans.
Thank you. 4.1.02, the Investment Attraction Fund, under Loans and Advances and Investments. It's $8 million per year fund. How much last year was only $2.3 million was spent? Why is there a challenge in awarding the funding or getting the funding out the door?
Well, I think sometimes this is driven by the market. So we always have eight, but I think we're actually par for the course in terms of money that went out last year. In some cases, depending on our venture capital and things like that, it comes down to who's asking us for the money for the drawdown. Sometimes they ask, sometimes they don't. The good news is it's better to have, in some cases, more than we need, although I would also love to see us tap that out completely. What I will say is that we've got the same amount budgeted this year. We are working on some new programming to go along with that. I'm hoping to see it out soon. I can't say any more than that yet without getting myself in trouble. But we've got some new ideas that we're trying. And the whole purpose is, again, we are constantly in a competition with Atlantic Canada, rest of Canada. So it's about trying to make yourself more attractive for somebody to come and invest here. And then what is the benefit that we get from that?
Revenue provincial, could you please provide an explanation where the revenue, where this revenue of $32,000 came from?
I think that $332,700 is loan repayments that were made over the course of the year from companies that may have got, you know, repayable loans or interest-free loans. That would be the payments that come in from those companies.
Okay. 4.2.01, the business analysis, salaries, the revised estimate for salaries, I guess that's salary adjustments again?
Yep, salary adjustments for negotiated salary increases.
Okay. Purchase services, provide an overview, I guess, last year's savings. Savings of almost $240,000.
Julian Ludmer, this is again related to investment attraction. These are purchase services to support those efforts. So since there was a bit of reduced activity in the fiscal year, also there was some reduced use of purchase services.
Grants and subsidies, provide a list of where the $430,000 grant money was given out.
We can provide a list. This would be funding that's used to cover federal income tax rebates for companies that qualified for the EDGE program. So that's where you come in, you create so many jobs, and then you get the rebate back. So we can provide that. I think we've got a few companies that still qualify under EDGE, and we have one new one, I think, last year. In PhoneMed, I think. Mm-hmm. PhoneMed, I think, was the new addition to that.
Okay. Under 4.3.01, Innovation and Business Investment, can you provide a list of how this grant money, the $16.8 million, was distributed?
Julian Ludmer, yes, this money is used to fund commercial and non-commercial research and development in the province, as well as business development efforts. So approximately $13.75 million is allocated for research and development, commercial and non-commercial, and around $3.1 million for business development. Yes.
Okay.
Just if I can add.
Sure.
Andrew, if I could add to that, so these would be under the IBIC board. So there's a board of individuals outside of government that basically take the applications, do the grading, submit it up to us for approval. So there is a outside arm's length board that does the, usually made up of individuals who are in the field that give us the analysis on whether we should invest or not invest.
Thank you. 4.1.01 to 4.3.01 inclusive, MHA Brown.
Just a quick question there under there for there. Any for funding and everything like this, is there any uptake from cooperatives or any kind of groups like that for any of this funding that is trying to get out the door there?
Absolutely. So cooperatives do fall under this department. Just had a meeting with the head of the cooperatives, Lloyd Hayden, last Thursday. So the long and short is that, yes, there is money there that goes to cooperatives. And in fact, we're actively trying to increase what goes to cooperatives because I personally think that it's the primary, it can be a success story in certain fronts, one of those being childcare. And we've seen that happen in Labrador. We've seen it happen in my own neck of the woods. So we're trying our best to, in fact, try to generate the cooperative story in other communities. In fact, I think it has a real opportunity to help rural communities where you have individuals who are looking to move out of the business, may not have a succession plan. It's an opportunity for communities and areas to keep the business, keep the community viable by by investing in that. Another big example, obviously, is the Leading Edge or Atlantic Edge, the credit unions movement. So we have a number of investments. I think we just put about $100,000 into that group as a whole, which is their core funding. We're working on a memorandum of understanding with them that should be executed soon. But if anything, we'd love to find more ways to find successes. I think the cooperative movement's an excellent way to generate success.
Perfect. Surrounding that, I know that some mentioned that updates and review of the legislation surrounding cooperatives. Is there any work being done on that in your department?
I think that might fall under service now.
Okay. I think the legislation's under service now.
So you guys provide the funding, but the legislation has somewhere else on it.
I think so.
Okay. Perfect. Nope. That's my only question for this section. Thank you.
Thank you. MHA Petten, 4.1.01 to 4.3.01 inclusive. Anything further?
Nope.
The committee is ready for the question. Shall 4.1.01 to 4.3.01 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? That section is carried, and I'll ask the clerk to call the final set of subheads, please.
Industry and Economic Development, 5.1.01 to 5.4.01 inclusive.
Shall 5.1.01 to 5.4.01 inclusive carry? MHA Petten.
Thank you, Chair. Moving along quicker than I thought, but that's never a bad thing. All good. 5.1.01, some line by line. So salaries expect to increase again. About 1.3 million, and I know probably the answer, but
negotiated salary increases
And transportation communications, the savings there was a result of
less travel.
Yeah,
same thing. Yeah,
they're answering ourselves. Right? Under purchase services, it was overspent by 1.3 million in 22-23. Any reason why?
Yep. So that is related to the Atlantic Cable Facility Management contract. So basically, going back to 2007-ish, when that was created formally through Persona, now through Eastlink, it was negotiated that there would be a 10-year vacation on payments with that. Now that's come owing, so we have to pay the cost to keep the line intact, as well as damages, for instance, when the line is, there's actually ships that, you know, drop anchor, sever the cable, we're on the hook for the costs. So that was our bill that was due this year. And I think that you could see that continuing on an ongoing basis while we had that. We do have conversations with outside providers on the possibility for partnering and doing different things with this redundancy. So those are ongoing. We wait and see what we hear back. But that's where that cost comes from.
Thank you. Grants and subsidies. Could you give us an overview of where the $100,000 was given last year?
Take that in. That's Jason Higgins. Generally speaking, that line item is for work we do with the craft industry. So there's a craft wholesale show here locally that we support our craft producers in. There's also the Atlantic Canada Craft Show.
which we support. Also, we do things like innovation challenges, ad hoc things, which falls under that category.
Yep, thank you. Yep. I remember that from a previous life when I was over in the department. In that section, I remember the craft fairs. Revenue provincial, there's $14,000 in revenue. Where did this come from?
I think this was received from a previous investment.
Yes,
so it's just revenue, I guess, we got from an investment we made. This would be the return.
Yeah, Jason Higgins, similar to the scenario Julian described, where there's revenue comes back in from an investment, which was unestimated, or unbudgeted, but received.
Okay. 5.2.01, regional economic development, business development. And salaries, there were savings of $920,000.
So all due to vacancies, and I can tell you that's one where, as a minister, you see the request for service or staffing action come in, and you have to sign off. The number that I see on this, it's extremely hard to hold on to talent throughout this province right now. Number one, just the job market the way it is, there's lots of opportunities and openings. Number two, we're competing with the federal government, which is never fun, as well as the, you know, the private market right now is increasingly coming after employees. So it's not a case of not trying to fill. We constantly run job opportunities. We constantly have people coming in, but there's a lot of opportunity right now. So the big thing to note there's not a decrease. We're not trying to reduce any positions. We want economic development officers out there. There's a lot I think we can work on here too. Possibility of how do we continue to work on regional economic development. We actually had them all coming together, hopefully this year for the first time in a number of years, where they'll come in together for a conference, because there's been a lot of turnover in the last number of years with this too, so it's a chance for everybody to meet with the staff. It's easier to bring everybody together than to have staff fan out throughout the province and indicate the priorities. So.
Okay, thank you. Transportation communications, last year there was a savings of $95,000.
Same thing. Staff, less travel to the sites.
Gotcha. 5.3.01, grants and subsidies. It was 9.96 million, almost 10 million, up to 19, almost $20 million given out. Can we have a list of recipients?
So, Jason Higgins, the 9.96 is under a couple of different categories. One is for community capacity building. So you probably get $250,000, $300,000 to go to municipalities, chambers of commerce, industry associations to help build their own internal capacity. Things as straightforward as governing a board to developing proposals. The bigger chunk of that money is under our regional development program, where, you know, throughout the province and all the different regions, we support things, similar applicants. For, you know, infrastructure, feasibility studies, research and development, marketing for different events in different sectors. So that's where most of that would go. And there's also a portion that goes to our partnership funding, we call it. So that's our partnerships with our industry associations like EcoNext, TechNL. You'll also see Federation of Co-ops in there as an entity we support, Organization for Women Entrepreneurs, ICADA. So that's where a good chunk of that goes as well, to support their efforts, which is a natural extension of what we try to do in our department.
Why wasn't the full amount given out?
We're still working on that, sir, because a lot of our money flow is in the last quarter. I think we have till April 12th to get all that dispersed. So we'll see where we are in the coming days.
Come back and ask you next month, right?
Yeah, it's true. A lot of it goes in the last quarter. So yep. Most of our crew are busy trying to get those payments dispersed up to April 12th.
Appreciate that. Under revenue federal, can you detail out $126,000 was received?
That's a variance for a grant payment, wasn't it? So that's a variance due to a grant repayment received related to a grant issued in the previous fiscal year.
Okay. It's getting down there. 5.4.01 under the Green Transition Fund. Could you outline what the salary complement is here, and are these new employees or employees come from another area?
That's you.
So Jason Higgins, This is a new line item. There are two positions that would be new that we have to create to administer that fund. It's a $100 million fund over 12 years that comes from West White Rose Project Extension. What we've got there now are individuals who are pretty much developing and devising the fund. So there'll be more details to come on the fund itself, but that's what those two positions are.
Transportation communications, how was this $65,000? How was that calculated? What's that include?
Yep, I can take that. Yep. So Jason Higgins, that there is in anticipation of promoting and communicating on the fund, the program itself, and also transportation that will come with meetings for various industry associations, potential clients and applicants. So it's really about under the category of promoting the program and communicating on it.
I can just add a little context to this. So this is brand new, basically, that we got out of West White Rose. We know what the cap is. We got $6 million. But it was a matter of basically establishing from scratch a new fund. So the reality is that we've put in baselines probably through analysis of all the rest of our T&C and purchase services and what we felt the needs were. But when we come back here next year, I mean, this is the first year of an estimate. So when we come back next year, that number may or may not change depending on what we see driving demand and things like that. I mean, I hope that it matches because it would show that your analysis was right on. But there's another part of me hopes that the demand is so much that we have to go over on certain things. Either way, the good news is that there is a revenue there that we can count on and see where it goes, right?
So in the grants and services, how will the $5.75 million be allocated? Like, what's the criteria?
So once this actually comes out, there's a little. So we announced it last year. We're going to be coming out again now and putting out the analysis and what we expect people, what is the parameters for application. So this will be application-based. People, industry, academia, you name it, will come in, they'll put the applications in. We know how much we have to give. We'll put a criteria in, a matrix of scoring and how that's going to be figured out, all under a certain front. You get some that will come in that may not apply or may not sort of qualify because they don't fit the needs. But the goal is to make sure that it gets out there because generally there's a couple things. There's a lot of good research. We saw this under O'Gira. There's a lot of good research comes out of it. The second part, there is a job creation aspect to this. So it's good on a number of fronts, and it's in this sector for which it's burgeoning right now. Everybody's talking about, green transition. Everybody's talking about these ways to decarbonize current industries such as mining, such as offshore. So it's absolutely needed, and we felt it was a good takeaway from when we figured out the West White Rose sort of reassessment and reimagining.
Thank you. MHA Brown, 5.1.01 to 5.4.01 inclusive.
Perfect. All right, for under 5.4.01, have there been any early expressions of interest in these grants, and what kind of projects would those expressions be at this time?
Did you want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure.
So it's Jason Higgins. No specific expressions just yet, but I think in early days of the program, we'll generate a lot of interest.
Yeah, and just for clarification, so the source of revenue that the $6 million, that comes from the agreement with West White Rose Extension. So is it going to be $6 million every year, or is there an increase or an escalator in that?
I can take that.
I think it's based on $100 million overall, so it may not stay at six. I think there's an escalator that's in there. So Craig might have a bit more.
Craig Martin. So this was the $100 million committed by the White Rose Project for the Green Transition Fund. So I think the payment period is it's in place for roughly 12 years, and it's on an escalating basis. It starts at six and increases over time. I think it's six for the first 3 years until West White Rose gets back out producing oil in terms of the new CGS project, and then it escalates from there. I think it's $12 million on the back end.
Okay, perfect. And that's all my questions for this section. Thank you.
Approved. 5.1.01 to 5.4.01, MHA Patton.
No, my questions are done. I just wanted just a minute just to thank Minister and his staff. I read in the estimates bond, or actually answered, and I know the Minister alluded to, he's been in this estimates process now for last year would have been 11, 12 years for you, was it? Yeah. And me too, as the minister always rightly points out, I've been around this place a lot longer than most, but as a previous life, I used to sit over there with former ministers and do estimates. So I always like to remind and tell people that I'm not just on this side, I know what it's like over there, and I appreciate the work that all your staff do. I've seen it firsthand myself, so I do really appreciate it. I do appreciate, Minister, your forthcoming, your answers. And I just said to our Megan and Plea that the answers are great. They're clear and they're to the point. And there's a lot to be said for that. So I just want to tip my hat to all of you for your time. This is another point I'll put on record. It's the fastest estimates I've ever been in. So I don't know who to thank for this. I thank everyone for that. But appreciate your time, yeah. Of course.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Before I go to MHA Brown, if the committee is ready for the question, shall 5.1.01 to 5.4.01 inclusive carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Shall the total carry? All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Shall I report the estimates of the Department of Industry, Energy, and Technology? Carried. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. MHA Brown, I'll just pass it to you for some final remarks.
All right. Thank you, Chair, and I want to thank everyone over there in the department for coming and answering the questions. Like I said, I echo my colleague's thing that, you know, it's usually pretty, for the last number of years, this department's been pretty clear and concise, and we get the answers that we're, in a way. So I really appreciate that, and I, like I said, I also appreciate the speed at which it was done today. It's always nice. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you all again next year.
Minister Parsons.
Thank you for that. Just a few things, and I don't want to belabor it. I think the speed of this is indicative of the lack of obfuscation, which is a fancy way of saying we try to be forthcoming, and I think that leads to more answers. This has always been my favorite part of the entire budget process, far more useful, I think, than sometimes budget debate. So I've always felt that way, and I'm glad you feel that way, as well as the fact that I point out that people like Jordan have regular meetings with the department, and it's because we tried our best to communicate information that's important to him. And I know that the offer's out there for critics. I know in this case Barry's probably handling like 8 departments now. So. As you'll notice, this is a pretty diversified department, from craft shows right up to oil and gas negotiations to a pretty rapidly evolving renewable sector. And the only reason we're as clear and as successful as we are is because I'm surrounded by an awesome, awesome team. My knowledge is, I'll say, broad, but certainly not even as close as deep and thorough as the people that are surrounding me, which is why if there's good work done here, they get the credit for it, as well as all the people that helped formulate the information they have. So it's a good team, and I'm glad this worked well for everybody. I'm appreciative.
Thank you, Minister Parsons, and I, too, thank your team for a great effort here this morning, as I do for the Resource Committee, and thank you to Evan, my colleague here from the House of Assembly, for assisting me this morning. And with that, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment. Moved by Lucy. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.